lights go down, the paranormal comes alive. We go deep into topics the lamestream media won't dare touch. From the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon, deep in the remote Pacific Northwest, you're traveling somewhere between abnormal and paranormal, into the paranormal.
Tonight, we go into the strange with some of the most fascinating, some of the most terrifying, and some of the most mystifying stories of the strange on record. Welcome from the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon, somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest. I am Jeremy Scott. My guest tonight on the program is Michael H. Brown. He's the author of 29 books on everything from the Mafia to the search for the first anatomically modern human woman using DNA. His latest is Lying Wonders, Strangest Things, the Most Amazing Phenomena in the World. Michael, it's a pleasure to have you on the program.
Pleasure to be with you, Jeremy.
So I'm interested in how you came to collect such a strange collection of stories.
Well, I've been interested in the paranormal since I was a kid. I collected UFO information back in the mid-60s. I had a huge project going on for years. I became a newspaper reporter, and I write stories on alleged haunted houses and so forth. My first book, which came out in 1976, was on psychokinesis. As a matter of fact, it was the first book ever written solely on psychokinesis, you know, the power of the mind to affect physical objects.
Sure.
When I was a kid, I used to read Stranger Than Science and reread it, you know, that book by Frank Edwards, who was a radio broadcaster, and it was a big bestseller of all these strange stories from around the world, and I just decided a couple years ago to kind of update things and find my own, and I think they're even stranger because of all the information now available. So that's kind of, in a nutshell, how I came to this point.
Any inspiration from that hit Netflix show?
No, I've never seen it.
Michael, you got to start now.
Okay, I've never seen it. Strangest Things comes from the Frank Edwards book. But they call theirs, what is it, Strange Things? And Stranger Things. And I certainly hear a lot about it. But I'm, you know, I'm not too much for television. I'm more of a reader and an internet searcher and a researcher in person myself. So, no, I haven't. I'm not. It hasn't anything to do with that show.
There's something, though, about reading something versus watching something. It opens up the mind, doesn't it, more, Michael?
Well, it does. You know, I mean, it allows you to grasp certain things that you can't through reading, and reading does the same, allowing you to grasp things in more depth than when you watch. So I guess, they're both have their place and they're both important.
Yeah. Now, what kinds of things are we talking about here in your book?
Well, there is a wide range. I mean, you have everything. I have a story on what I think is a stranger alleged UFO crash than Roswell. I have, it's in Missouri, southern Missouri. Perhaps you've done some research
on that. Is that the Cape Girardeau?
That's right. And, you know, that's an amazing story. In 1941, allegedly, there was a craft that crashed about a mile south of the Cape Girardeau Airport. And I was out there just recently. The helicopter pilots in the area, I happened to run into a clutch of them at a heliport, and they all were conversant with it. They all knew about it, and no one knows exactly where the crash occurred. But the original details came from a minister, ironically, in town, who was called to the crash to administer last rites, allegedly, to deceased beings that had been in a crash. So there's stories like that. There's stories on curses. They're not all supernatural stories. There are some that are just incredible oddities, the oddest coincidences and things of that nature. There are stories of miracles. Well, there's a story. There are stories that get into the realm of kind of exorcism. For instance, a young boy in the Philippines named Cornelio Closa, who in 1952 became possessed after seeing the apparition of what he described as a beautiful young woman, and his whole personality changed. And not only did it become bellicose, getting into fights, causing disruptions, but soon phenomena occurred around him, including his own disappearances in front of people. It's not just that he went somewhere and they don't know where he went, or he was in his room and now he's not. In this case, there were dozens and dozens of people, including, again, a local exorcist called in, his parents, the teacher of his class, his entire classroom, saw him disappear on a number of occasions right in front of their eyes. And later on, he went to a service by a preacher, and he happened to come out of it. It turned out that he saw this beautiful young woman turn into this ugly, demonic creature. And like I said, that was the end of that episode. But there's stories like that. There's stories on a strange hotel in L.A. that where real peculiar things have gone on for many years, including very strange deaths. And a panoply, I guess you'd say. There's a chapter in the book on a novel, or actually several novels, that are more than 100 years old and really specifically predicted Donald Trump, including by his name, by the name Trump. And this is all documented. It's, there's even been stories lately in the mainstream media about these novels, written by a lawyer at the end of the 1800s. So there are all those kinds of stories, a little bit on mutilated, things like mutilated cows, you know, the whole range, living fossils, reports of relic dinosaurs and other type of creatures in various parts of the world, pterodactyls in New Guinea and so forth. So I guess it goes to many places, and some ghost stories, of course, more of those, and dolls that seem possessed. So you got a wide range here, and I try to keep them brief to the point, like Frank Edwards did in his book back in the 50s.
So, yeah, basically, your book covers everything. I want to go back to where we started, which was the Cape Girardeau UFO crash, because that happened in the spring of 1941, which was, 6 years predating Roswell. And, from the evidence that is there, this seems to be not an urban legend.
You know, I don't. You got this Reverend William Huffman, William Guy Huffman Sr., if you want to get technical. And it was, I guess, Holy Saturday in 1941 when the police called up and said they needed him for what seemed like a crash of a small plane. When he got out there, he's shocked to see a disc there in flames, and there are these small entities around it. Several of them. One seemed to still be gasping for breath. It might be near, like Scott City, at Chaffee or Scott City, somewhere near Route 62. He came back and he told his family, two sons and a wife. He said, "I'm only going to tell you this once, and then I'm never going to speak of this again." And he described this scene of locals running to it, and there was police and firemen trying to put out the fire. He said he glimpsed into the disc, into the craft, and it had like hieroglyphic-like markings inside. It was seamless, no rivets or anything inside. very smooth interior, otherworldly. And he described the entities that were outside the craft and deceased as your classic gray aliens. And this is, again, and like you emphasized, back in 1941, before UFOs were a national craze sparked by Kenneth Arnold and Mount Rainier. But there were others, too. There was a fire chief who, on his deathbed, said that what, you know, Reverend Huffman had told his family was true. His granddaughter later on gave these details, I think, in the late 1970s, and that's why we know about it. But I don't know, you know, how does this stuff come out of whole cloth? It seems like something went on there near Route 62, south of the Cape Girardeau Airport.
And so this thing basically came down. People thought it was a plane. It crashed. It was, you know, the classic silver round disc, and started a fire, actually.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there was a fire there. Huffman said that in short order, there were military folks around, both in uniform as well as suits. And they made it very clear that there would be tremendous repercussions if anyone talked about it. What's particularly interesting is that a few years later, another preacher, this time from the Midwest, was in Washington visiting his cousin, who happened to be at the time Secretary of State. And he claimed that this cousin of his took him. This preacher was named Turner Holt, and his cousin was Cordell Hull. And he said, his cousin wanted to get his impression of something that was in a sub basement of the Capitol in Washington, where in a secured storage room, he claimed he was shown a metallic like wreck that fit descriptions of what allegedly transpired in Missouri in 1941, and he too kept it a secret except for his closest relatives. So, very intriguing story. You know, we know Roswell, of course. They think the wreckage and evidence was taken first to Dallas and then Wright Patterson and then maybe Area 51 in Nevada. But this case is certainly intriguing, but you know, it's a blind alley because there just ain't many people alive who knew anything about it.
And I want to know what your theory is, you know, on because there, you know, there was one apparently of these beings that was dead, apparently on impact, another that appeared to be dying, yet couldn't breathe. And I'm wondering if you think maybe there's something going on where when they fly into Earth's atmosphere, maybe you know, maybe they're affected differently than when they're, you know, flying high above the Earth.
I don't know, because you have, you nearly had the same template occur in Roswell, then, where you had creatures who were dead around a craft, disc-shaped again, and also on the plane of San Augustine out there around the same time in 1947, early July of 1947, again, several dead entities. So maybe it's atmospheric, or if these are true accounts, or just from the impact of whatever it is may have downed these alleged craft. UFOs are an amazing topic because many of them, in my estimation, are spiritual phenomena. They're like the orbs people report at cemeteries. But in cases like this, where people claim to have seen something with physicality, well, it takes you back. It takes you back, and you look, you just wonder what the government does know.
You know, if I think I was the extraterrestrial race, that I would be, you know, more advanced than, say, the human race. Yet back at the time of this crash, there were some wires inside that would indicate that they had something to do with the design of this craft. And I guess I would assume that the extraterrestrials would be far more sophisticated than that, although they may be present day.
You know, who knows? I don't know. I don't know how they would look upon us. The confusing thing about UFOs is how many different types of creatures are claimed, how it often ties into spiritual phenomena. You'll hear of UFOs above old Indian burial mounds or other ritual-type places. You'll hear reports of them where Bigfoot is also seen, or the Loch Ness Monster, so-called monster. Why? Why is there a connection? You know, why is there often the odor of burnt sulfur in both UFO cases and Bigfoot cases and so forth? So you have to wonder if a lot of these are not spiritual phenomena and spiritual deceptions. Look at how many types of craft are reported. I mean, there's a tremendous range. So if that many different civilizations were visiting Earth, I mean, would they really all obey the command not to interfere with us? Wouldn't some of them be perhaps wayward? Wouldn't they leave a little more litter? I know that the military can be very tight with things, but to be honest with you, I think the military is and the government is dumbfounded by a lot of this and doesn't know how to evaluate it. And I also have to submit for your consideration that if there have been so many crashes, and of course there's others alleged in various parts of the world, not just the U.S., where's the physical evidence? Where is it? I mean, I find it hard to believe that the government, that, you know, it could be covered up that completely everywhere in the world. So I don't know, you know, I don't know what to make of the vast majority of this. I just know that, like a, famous philosopher, Haldane, once said, he said, the universe is not only stranger than we imagine, it's stranger than we can imagine.
Yet here's the government, here's the military trying to cover this up, which speaks to the authenticity that there was something going on here.
It does, unless, like you take Roswell, you know, the explanation that it was Project Mogul, you know, that it was a crash of a train of monitoring balloons, atmospheric balloons that were in a secret, top secret project of the Air Force to monitor radiation levels coming from what was the Soviet Union. And you know, the military is, they are very tight with information like that. And so you can imagine that, but what about these small entities that are seen around the desk? Some people have said that they were using dwarfs or midgets, even POWs from Japan. That's why the after the war. That's why the slanty eyes. You know, it can get pretty far afield. I don't know, but certainly the government, until recently, has not been very interested in speaking about it. You have a story running as we speak about a North Carolina congressman, Mark Walker, and he came out and he is complaining. He's accusing the Navy of withholding information.
Mark Warner.
Wrong here in Politico. They're saying Mark Walker of North Carolina, and that he asked Secretary Richard Spencer in July to outline, you know, exactly what the Navy is dedicating to investigating what they call unidentified aerial phenomena. But it was very interesting in that report, because you read in it, it's in the Politico report, that the Pentagon financed a series of theoretical studies trying to explain how the aircraft might operate. And one of them was entitled Detection and High-Resolution Tracking of Vehicles at Hypersonic Velocities. And another one, even more intriguingly, was entitled Warp Drive dark energy and the manipulation of extra dimensions. These are Pentagon documents. So, you have all of these presidents or presidential candidates promising to get to the bottom of things, but they don't seem to make much headway.
Well, I actually got to say that you're actually on top of it more than I am, because this is a story that's broken within the last 24 hours or so. And you're right. It is Representative Mark Walker of North Carolina. But back in June, there was a story of Senator Mark Warner, not to be confused with Senator Mark Walker. Warner is a senator from Virginia, and he was quoted in the report from June regarding the classified Pentagon briefing that was held on this subject. Nonetheless, we certainly have a case here where the government seems to be more interested in this. 90 seconds until we hit our break here. We mentioned the evidence and where the wreckage may have gone. Not Area 51 by all accounts, but more likely at Wright-Patterson. Right, Michael?
Yes, although some people claim that after Wright-Patterson, it went to Area 51, where there were these alleged projects to try to reverse engineer, I guess is the term they use. Who knows? You know, Area 51, interesting. Is there anything behind it? I have no idea. The CIA took it over in 1955 to develop the U-2. And that's certainly reason enough for it to be top secret. But, you know, where there's smoke, there's often fire, and there's just so much smoke about Area 51, if you want to call it that, or Groom Lake, I think, is the official name for the area. And, you know, who knows? You've got these people like Lazar, who have claimed to been part of projects to back engineer these craft that were wreckage, that were at places like Roswell and the plain of San Augustine, and maybe Missouri near Cape Girardeau back in 1941.
I don't know, is there anything behind Area 51? It certainly seems like there might be, or maybe we just have a bunch of uninformed populace who still thinks that they're going to find some evidence there. Minimum 30 years too late. From the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest, I'm Jeremy Scott with Michael H. Brown. Lying wonders, strangest things on Into the Parabnormal.
Don't venture too far. You might not make it back. Into the Parabnormal.
Abnormal News. I'm Brad Bernards.
NASA has issued a warning over a massive asteroid that's expected to skim past Earth.
This asteroid is so immense, it's nearly twice the height of the 1,250-foot-tall Empire State Building. It's expected to whiz by our blue planet on September 14th, according to the Center for Near-Earth Object Studies, a part of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California.
The space agency says that in space terms, it'll be a close call.
Asteroid 2000 QW7 will be going over 14,000 miles per hour as it zooms by Earth, and even though it's considered a near-Earth object, it will still be quite far away. Asteroids and other space materials are considered near-Earth objects if they pass within 1.3 astronomical units of our planet, an astronomical unit being the distance from Earth to the Sun. Just like Earth, asteroid 2000 QW7 orbits the Sun. However, it only sporadically crosses paths with the Earth. The last time it approached our planet was September 1st, 2000. After September 14th, the next time it's expected to pass by is October 19th, 2038, according to the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. We learn from our personal interaction with the world, and our memories of those experiences help guide our behaviors. Experience and memory are inexorably linked, or at least they seem to be, before a recent report on the formation of completely artificial memories. Using laboratory animals, investigators reverse engineered a specific natural memory by mapping the brain circuits underlying its formation. Then they trained another animal by stimulating brain cells in the pattern of the natural memory. Doing so created an artificial memory that was retained and recalled in a manner indistinguishable from a natural one, according to a report in Scientific American. This showed that the animals did not need to actually experience the event to remember a connection. Creating artificial memories brings us closer to learning how memories form and could ultimately help us understand and treat dreadful diseases such as Alzheimer's. Memories, however, cut to the core of our humanity, and we need to be vigilant that any manipulations are approached ethically. Interact with these stories at ParanormalRadio.com. I'm Brad Bernards, Paranormal News.
Secret dungeon. Somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest, you're traveling into the paranormal with Jeremy Scott.
September 20th, about 3 in the morning. Well, I think millions now say that they're interested in attending. How many actually turn out? There's another event in the area as well, I understand. So this is just really ballooned into something that I think the original creator didn't even envision. Although there was some weird activity of late going on at Area 51, which my friend Ty Rogaway over at the War Zone reported on a couple of weeks ago. What was some of that activity going on, Michael?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, it seemed like the military was getting ready for anyone coming there. I mean, when you have 1.5 million people responding to what I think started as like a social media joke to storm Area 51. But I don't know, were they removing anything from there in case or bolstering their security? Again, I don't know, and I wasn't out there. But who knows? You know, there is just so much deep secrecy. I don't even know what they would label the secrecy around some parts of the Groom Lake facility. And it's, and by the way, Area 51, I'm sure you know, is not really any official terminology. It was used once, I think, in official documents. It might be an Atomic Energy Commission numbering grid for the for the area, the Nevada test range there. But who knows what they're doing in there? There have been, as you know, a couple other people who have been insiders and claim various things. But it just and passing lie detector tests several times can be very impressive. Faulty as those can be. Something certainly is going on there. I personally think it must go beyond just the stealth bomber and next generation fighters that we're building. There are certain other things, and one can imagine why the military doesn't share this even with presidents, because presidents can only be there for 4 years, and and this is perhaps beyond anything a president can even get to the bottom of. We know that Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan said they had seen UFOs, and they didn't just glimpse something very briefly. In the case of Jimmy Carter, when he was governor, I mean, I think it was 1969, he was speaking at a something like a Lions Club event. He viewed an object in the sky with a dozen other people for 15 minutes and described in detail the color, the way it changed colors and so forth. Ronald Reagan saw one as he was flying into Bakersfield, I think it was. Shortly after that, he was governor at the time also, and he and a pilot and other people with him. were staring out the window at this object that was acting in a way that no human-built object could. But, you know, Reagan couldn't get to the bottom of it. Jimmy Carter didn't get to the bottom of it. Bill Clinton said he was going to get to the bottom of it and even mentioned Area 51. But we didn't see anything come out there. His wife, Hillary, then vowed the same thing. Trump mentioned it, but nothing, nada. And so I think that the presidents are in the dark as much as we are.
One of the most suspicious indicators that there could still be some activity going on at Area 51 is the fact that Janet Airlines is still flying folks from the Las Vegas airport to, quote, Area 51. And these people who are on these flights, well, you can't buy a ticket, number one. And these people who are on the flights are not allowed to tell people what they do. This is really going on right now. It seems very similar to the Bob Lazar story, where he said that he was, you know, taken to one area and then taken to another. And of course, we know that was S4 and Groom Lake. Why might these flights still be happening if there wasn't something going on?
Something must be going on. I mean, you leave early in the morning sometimes. This is a flight that's, what, 80 miles? And yet, you know, it's they don't just taxi you in a bus over there. They're very meticulous. Yeah, a lot of these guys come back so late, can't talk to their own wives about what they're doing, causes a lot of tension in their marriages. There have been marital split-ups over Area 51. So, you know, certainly things are going on there that are different. Is it related to the Phoenix Lights? Is it related, like we've been talking about, to the various alleged wreckage? I don't know. And Wright Patterson, I think that there are stories to be told from there, maybe even more than Area 51 there near Dayton, Ohio, where Project Blue Book was based, at least for quite a while. And again, where alleged aliens were taken, recovered from various alleged crash sites. So Wright Patterson, I actually find in some ways to be more intriguing, but this Area 51 is still going on. And it's going to be interesting in a few weeks to see the upshot of all this, because there's going to be a lot of mainstream media attention on it for the first time ever at a level, the highest level anyway, ever.
Well, interesting you should say that, because that's what our program will be on next week, about Wright Patterson and about what really goes on there. My guest is Michael H. Brown, and the title of his new book is Lying Wonders, Strangest Things, The Most Amazing Phenomena in the World. And I think folks might not be clear on what the term lying wonders entails. Can you explain that?
Sure, I can. I think a lot of these things, whether it's Bigfoot, you know, cryptids, whatever you want to call them, in a realm of cryptozoology, whether it's in a realm of ufology, and so forth, can be, and ghosts and so forth, can be lying wonders from the dark side, from evil, from demonic sources. And I think that's why you have to be very careful with it. I used to investigate haunted houses. I've met Uri Geller. I was in his apartment when there was a teleportation back in the mid-1970s as a newspaper reporter. I know that this phenomena exists, but, where's it coming from? Uri Geller claimed to be in touch with, entities millions of years or hundreds of thousands of years into the future that were coming back in time. He was followed by a UFO when he was a kid. So there's now he's a psychic, of course. A lot of people claim he's a fraud. I don't believe that he's totally fraudulent. He may have done trickery on occasion, but I know that he's done things, including for me, that are beyond the scope of magic, of stage magic. And I can talk a little bit about that if you want. I'm not going to do that at the moment, but.
Once you're finished with this, tell us about, you know, what it is you personally witnessed.
Okay. Well, I'd like to. Again, this is like in 1975 for that book on psychokinesis. I had been in the physics laboratory at Kent State University, the Smith Hall of Physics, and I was doing research about a physicist there named Dr. Wilbur Wright, and he had analyzed a platinum ring that Geller had caused to split without touching. It had been held in by a Stanford Research Institute scientist, and Geller simply put his hand over the scientist's hand, and when the scientist opened his hand up, his platinum wedding band was split. Dr. Franklin, I don't know where I'm getting right. I'm getting right. Right is on my mind because they're both in Ohio. But Dr. Wilbur Franklin took the fracture surface under an electron microscope, and he found an absolutely stunning, inexplicable effect. That is, that on the same fracture surface, there were indications of incipient melting of the metal, juxtaposed. Adjacent to an area of the fracture surface that showed an effect that could only be accomplished at close to absolute zero. There is no one who could duplicate that, let alone a stage magician. And yet you got all these, you know, when I was with Geller, before I went to see Geller, I happened to be talking to Milbourne Christopher, who was a major magician. He was known as the magician with the most expertise in occult magic, legerdemain, trickery, and he didn't believe any of the psychic stuff, any of the ghost stuff. And I told him I was going to see Geller, and he said, "Well, I can tell you something to do with Geller that can't be a trick." And I was all ears. I said, "What should I do?" He said, "You go to see Geller. He's gonna tell you to envision an object or something, and then draw it." He said, "It's easy. He's going to sneak a peek, or he's going to read the top of your pen as you're drawing whatever you see in your mind, and then he's going to recreate it." He says, "That's easy to do." He said, "Let me tell you something that no magician could do." He said, "Tell Geller that you'll be the one who draws it. Sends it. You tell him to draw what you're thinking, and so forth." So we did both ways. And what was amazing when we did it with Geller as the sender is that after Geller imagined an object in his mind, he gave me the piece of paper he drew. Obviously, I didn't know how to read the top of his pen. I don't know what he was doing. He gave it to me. I folded it. I put it under my leg like Christopher told me to do. And then I shut my eyes, and Geller sent me the image he was thinking of. I immediately, Jeremy, saw a Christmas tree with three ridges on each side, formed as if by lightning. And I remember that on the right side, the trunk was detached from the rest of the Christmas tree. That I saw it immediately. I reached under my leg for the piece of paper he had given me, and it's exactly what he had drawn. So there was and then shortly after that, it's inexplicable. There is no scientific or magic explanation for that. And during that same interview, all of a sudden, there was this loud crash in his apartment. At the time, he lived on the Upper East Side of New York, of Manhattan. And he jumped up, I jumped up, ran over. It was this beautiful antique wood chessboard that a rock had flown in and crashed into. And he starts jumping up and down. "See, these things happen all the time," he says. "People don't believe me." And I know I was looking right at him. He didn't throw anything, but I wondered if somebody was hiding in the apartment. So I said, you know, excuse me for doing this, but can I search your apartment? He says, go ahead. And I looked in the closets. I looked all over. Here's an object. It looked like a small, tiny meteorite or something. It was porous. It had flown in and marked this beautiful chessboard. Why would he... Even if he could have tossed it, which he couldn't have, I was watching him when this bang occurred. Why would he go and damage a very expensive chessboard to impress a guy who was at the time a local newspaper reporter? I think stuff was going on with Geller a lot more than what we have time for, but something very paranormal certainly was operating and probably is operating with Geller. The question is. Is it a lying deception? Are these UFOs, he says, he's involved in, are they just spirits playing a game with him?
When we're talking about some of the stranger or the strangest things, you want to maybe pick one for us here that we haven't touched on yet?
Well, you know, there really are so many, but, you know, I guess when I think of really strange things, I think of things like dolls at various museums, whether in Key West or up in Canada, that seem to be possessed. You know, you don't really think of an object being possessed. I guess I think of a village in Bosnia, Herzegovina, I've been to now 8 or 9 times, where all of these incredible miracles have occurred. I've seen things in the sky that are just incredible there at Medjugorje. There are so many, it's hard to pin one down. I saw recently a Bible that the oil is coming out of this thing. You know, I have held statues as oil is coming out of them, and yet they're hollow statues. I've been able to hold them while this is happening. There's no hoses in them. There was a woman who predicted 9/11 in tremendous detail to me. Before it occurred, I have a website and spiritdaily.com, and I had her prediction as the headline 3 times before 9/11 occurred. And it was very interesting because after 9/11 did occur, I called her. She's from Venezuela. And I said, well, now who's behind this? It was just the day after 9/11 and no one knew. Was it Hamas? Hezbollah, who, you know, no one heard of Al-Qaeda back then or anything. And she told me, behind this is a roaring lion, And when my wife, a few days after that, or a few weeks after that, happened to be looking at a book of, or a website of etymology, you know, the origin of names, and she put Osama in there, and there it was, roaring lion. So, you know, there's amazing stories like this. There's more stuff on Geller. There's stuff on rock stars and UFOs, you know. Elvis, from Elvis Presley to John Lennon to Garcia and the Grateful Dead and so forth. It's amazing how many rock stars claim close encounters of the inexplicable kind. And I think one of the creepiest, to be frank about it, was when these physicists out in California who were working on a CIA project, CIA admits it, that they had a project in psychic phenomena in conjunction with Stanford Research Institute. And at one point there was this apparition that occurred to the scientist and the CIA caseworker. That was like this phantom man dressed in black, who kind of barged into their meeting, walked around, and then just vanished. They couldn't find where he had gone, even though they searched all over the place. So all kinds of stuff like that in Lying Wonders, Strangest Things,
including the story of a doll, a haunted doll. I imagine that has the ability to send text messages. Which is creepy in and of itself.
Well, you know, at least on one occasion, because I interviewed a woman who became the curator of the museum, and there are all these accounts on a doll that would move around. People find it in a different place. Be careful with it. This thing is bizarre, and so forth. And when she started her job, she told me that when she was on her way to the new job, she had just gotten a new cell phone, hadn't given anyone the number, and there was supposedly a doll there. I believe its name was Mandy. This is in British Columbia. At any rate, she said that after Mandy, when she was on her way to this museum that had an exhibit on Mandy, all of a sudden she got this this text that just said, there was an X and it said Mandy. It was signed Mandy. And she's, what? It was kind of indecipherable, but why would it have the name of this doll? Who possibly could know her cell number? Did a spirit text her? And as we know, Jeremy, spirits are not bound by time or space. So, again, can they inhabit an object? Sure. And I believe they have. I think, like I said, is also a case, and very compelling case in Key West. I advise people to stay clear of this stuff because a lot of people who are involved with these, quote, haunted dolls, unquote, especially at museums, then encounter a series of unfortunate events, if you will. Got to be careful with this stuff. I know that the hard way. Got to be very, very careful with it.
No, did something happen to you?
I've had a number of things happen to me. When I started out really investigating that first book, PK, A Report on Psychokinesis, I ended up even doing a story for the Atlantic Monthly on psychokinesis. But at any rate, I was stupid enough to be going into haunted houses and using a Ouija board to try to see what spirit was there.
No.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was in my 20s. Stupid. And very stupid. And in one case, on Oak Street in Binghamton, New York, we went to a, quote, haunted apartment, unquote. I say we, there was a professor from the State University working with me. And all of a sudden, the temperature lowered in the room, and I was just thrown across the room. He said, all of a sudden, I just found myself across the room. He said it was like something just picked me up and whisked me right across the room. I could go on with accounts like that, but, and that's why, personally, I take a Christian approach to it, because I think you have to be extremely careful with these things, and they'll play with you, they will lie to you, they're extremely deceiving, and they can make themselves look like an alien, or a Loch Ness Monster, or a Bigfoot, or any such thing. So maybe there really are cryptids that are physiological, I don't know, but I'm virtually certain there are some that are mirages from the spiritual side.
So do you think that some of this stuff, maybe most of this stuff, is connected in some way?
Yes, I do. I'm at a loss in many cases to tell you how. Like I said, I can't fit in physical wreckage with spiritual phenomena in most cases. So if those cases are true, I'm dumbfounded. But in so many of these UFO cases, like you take Irigo, the surgeon of the rusty knife, the miraculous healer down in South America, there were UFOs over him. You know why? So he was like a spirit medium. There seemed to be a lot of connections.
Michael, thank you so much for coming on the program. Lying Wonders, Strangest Things, the Most Amazing Phenomena in the World is the title of his book, and his website, spiritdaily.com. Best to you, Michael.
Best to you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And friends, from the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest, I'm Jeremy Scott. Night-night, friends.